Hi, everyone. Welcome to Holistic Matters Podcast, the podcast that's designed to help you become the you that nature intended. I'm John Trope, your host, and today we're with Dr. Stavros Kavaras, who is the professor and director of the Hydration Lab at Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona. Stavros, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, John. It's an honor to be part of your podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, great. So I was really looking forward to this podcast on this topic of hydration. You know, few people really take hydration, I think, probably as seriously as they might. And there are a lot of great science, particularly being led by you and your groups now, that have been studying hydration for quite some time. Can you give us just a little bit of an overview of how you got interested and why you got interested in this concept of hydration, having a background really in exercise and sports science?
Yes, the truth is I'm coming from a background of exercise science. So I did my PhD with Larry Armstrong, who is one of the biggest figures in hydration science, and this is probably the main reason that I started studying hydration. But anecdotally, since I was a kid, I remember always being making fun of, I think, of myself, because I was drinking so much water, and everybody was like, well, go to a restaurant, I will be the person that will empty the water bottle, like, in no time. Hydration has evolved tremendously. Obviously, my background started from exercise science, and I was interested in exploring how dehydration impacts exercise performance. However, the most recent years, I've been concentrating my research in the area of how water intake impacts well-being and day-to-day good living and health. That happens to impact the rest 99.5% of the people that they are not NFL players or NBA players or professional athletes.
Right. That's awesome. So, you know, one of the things that particularly in America and around the world are everybody are sport fans, and maybe the first obvious question that we should probably address is, you know, as fans, we watch athletes, and on the sidelines, there's always these sports enhancement beverages. There's some water that's being consumed, but at the end of the day, what's more important, water, hydration in general, these sports nutrition drinks, or what's a kind of a simple recommendation that you would suggest that the average individual and then the average active individual should be aware of when they're trying to think about hydration and staying hydrated?
This is a very good question. People ask me this question all the time. Can I be hydrated with just drinking water, or do I really need a specific hydration product, whether it is a sport drink? So sport drinks they're called sport drinks because they're designed for sports, and they're designed for people that they are not just physically active. There are people that they do a lot of training. So this is something that it will be beneficial to consume if you exercise for at least 1 hour of high-intensity exercise or longer duration for moderate exercise. So this is really for athletes, college athletes, high school athletes, or professional athletes. Unless you are a weekend warrior and you go out in the weekend and you do, I don't know, 3 hours cycling, and that would be also beneficial. Water could cover your drinks during exercise. Also, sport drinks are designed to be consumed during exercise. So after exercise or before exercise, you can consume water and have regular food. There is no need to really have sport drinks before or after, unless, again, you are not one of those athletes that, I don't know, you're a tennis player and you're competing in Australian Open and you have a preliminary game in the morning, or one game one day and next day you have another game, and you really have to have a very scientifically designed rehydration protocol to make sure you replenish all the water and the electrolytes that you lose. So if you are one of those people, yes, you will benefit from sport drinks. But if you're a regular human being that you're physically active, or probably like most people that they are not that physically active, unfortunately, which is more than 50% of the U.S. population, water is probably the drink of choice to be well hydrated.
Right. Okay. You know, you and your team in particular have really made some incredible advances and identified key insights in this concept of hydration. But maybe we could start at you know, the basics with the background that you just gave us. So, you know, in the world of food and nutrition, right, there are, you know, well-known recommendations and recommended daily intakes for micronutrients and macronutrients. But there hasn't yet been formally established some scientific basis or recommendation for consumption of water or staying hydrated. Can you give us some insights on is there a truly recommended level of hydration and consumption of water that people should be aware of, and why is that the case?
So when I present about hydration, I like to say that water is a forgotten nutrient. And it is a nutrient because your body, even though your body can really generate a very small amount of water when you metabolize food, you really need to consume water to be able to make it. And it is a nutrient because if you don't take that nutrient, you're going to die in a few days. You know, we know, unfortunately, from starvation studies and from hunger strikes that people can live on water but without any food for maybe as much as 45, maybe 60 days. If you don't consume any water, you will barely make it beyond probably a week or two at max. So water is necessary for health, and everybody knows that, and there is no question about it. However, it has been forgotten to be studied, and it's probably because it comes natural. It's almost like oxygen. You don't think about it. You drink water whenever you want. There is no limit on how much water you're supposed to drink. There is no upper limit in the dietary guidelines on water consumption. It has no calories. Drinking more water is healthy, and people have just forgotten. So to convince you on this fact, which is, I say this with many people, we discuss this topic, and they're like, really? Like, I don't even believe that story. I'm like, look at the dietary guidelines. So if you look at MyPlate, or if you're a little bit older and you remember the previous recommendations for water, the basic fives, the basic eights, or the dietary pyramids, we had two different versions of pyramids. There was no water, and still if you go to myplate.gov, there is no water. There is something that looks like a glass, probably, that says dairy, and it's blue. Unfortunately, we have forgotten it. On the other side, if we look at the dietary guidelines of the Institute of Medicine that issues all the dietary guidelines for every macro and micronutrient, the first dietary guidelines were published in 2004. And because they did not have scientific data to support how much water does what and whether what is the healthy amount that you're supposed to consume, what they did, they record what Americans consume. And based on this data, they assume if you're alive and healthy, that amount should be okay. So they took the mean value, they took the median value, the value right in the middle of the distribution of how much people consume, and they said this value should be okay. And those numbers, just to give some practical information on what is recommended, is 3.7 liters for adult males and 2.7 liters for adult females. So if this is the total amount of water that you consume. So that includes any water in every beverage, any water molecule, including water that comes from food. There is water in rice, there is water in pasta, in bread, in meat, in fruits, of course, and fruits and vegetables. So if you do that correction and you take only the beverage, that amount is approximately 90 ounces or 12 glasses of water for adult males and about 8 glasses of water for adult females. So these are the recommendations, but actually they're not RDAs that we use in nutrition. They are DRIs, so they are reference values.
Right.
That if you consume those, you should be adequately hydrated.
And so that's 12 glasses is basically an 8 ounce glass or 12?
Correct. It's for 8 ounces glasses.
Okay.
Which, to be perfectly honest, I have yet to meet any human being in the U.S. that has an 8 ounce glass in their kitchen. I think most people have at least 12 or 16 ounces, or if you go to a restaurant, they rarely serve you on an 8 ounces glass, whether it is water or it's a soft drink or anything. So it might sound a terrible amount, you know, a lot of water that you're supposed to consume. Really, it's not that massive amount, and it's not 12 massive 16-ounce glasses. I mean, the 12 and 16-ounce glass became probably the standard.
Yeah, okay. The research that you and your team have done, Stavros, is there, you know, and what are the health issues if you consume, you know, less than those recommended values? You know, I mean, I know a lot of people that don't really go out of their way to drink anything outside of, say, the meal times, or it's probably an addition of half of what you just described, maybe 4 or 5 glasses or 12 ounces of some kind of liquid in general. What are the consequences if you don't consume enough liquid?
This is a very good point, and this has been a very interesting discussion over the last few years. And this discussion got generated primarily around 2003-2004, that Professor Valtin published a paper saying that the 8x8, the 8 glasses of water that most people have heard how much water you're supposed to drink, 8 glasses of 8 ounces per day, has no scientific basis. So he went into literature and he tried to see whether, do we know how much we're supposed to drink? And the answer was no. And this is a legit answer, because at least back then, we didn't know how much we're supposed to drink. So, unfortunately, how some people interpreted this is that your body can handle hydration very well. And as a response, you don't have to drink, you don't have to worry about water. Drink anything you want, as much as you want, your body will take over it. And how your body takes over and how your body regulates hydration is by increasing a hormone, which is called antidiuretic hormone. And what this hormone does, it decreases urinary output. So if you're what we call low drinkers, people that they consume just a little bit of water or a little bit of beverages with meals and coffee, then during the day, you're running in this metabolic condition where your body is constantly trying to conserve water. So what you see as a consumer, as a human being, that you're not a scientist and you don't do biomedical analysis all the time, you see that you're not going to the bathroom that often. You go to the bathroom maybe 3-4 times a day. And when you go to the bathroom, you produce little and very concentrated urine. So this condition, we call it underhydration. And the big question is, does this condition, the condition that your body is fighting to conserve the water that your body has, is that healthy for you? And the answer is no. It's no based on what we know right now. So let me give you some facts. We have very good numbers, actually, in America. We have more than 50% of adults and more than 60% of children and adolescents do not meet the dietary guidelines for water intake.
Wow. That's amazing.
More than 50% of children have very concentrated urine, indicating that they are poorly hydrated or underhydrated. And if you see what these children drink throughout the day, 1 in every 4 children, they do not consume any water. Zero.
What are they drinking?
More than three out of 4, they drink either concentrated juices or soft drinks.
Wow.
Or milk. So they consume caloric drinks, and more than 75% of American kids, they consume more than 1 glass of sugary drink, whether it is a soda or whether it is a juice, a fruit juice that has added sugar in it. And then we're opening a different topic, which is what is the effect of this extra sugar that you consume, the added sugar. It's not the sugar that you eat when you have an apple, for example. It's the extra sugar that you consume that has negative health effects.
Yeah, wow.
We do know that 1 soda consumption per day, just 1, increases the risk for diabetes by between 20 to 40%, depends on your age group and your metabolic condition.
Right.
How many people do you know that they consume 2 or 3 or 4 of those servings per day?
Yeah.
And then if you add sugar in coffee drinks, and coffee is an interesting topic. Coffee has become like a liquid dessert. You go to Starbucks or any of those coffee shops, and then you take a, a coffee drink that you think is a coffee, and sometimes these coffees can have as much as 2,000 calories in a cup.
Right. So Stavros, what you're describing is, a couple of really important points. Number one is hydration is really critical, but the right source of that hydration is even more critical and should probably be a clear liquid, should we call it that, like water. And then if you don't do that, the tendency then would be to shift your selection to high sugar-based beverages that then in turn accelerate or complicate your health status in a negative way. I mean, is that fair? We need to be more aware of consuming water.
Let me give you a couple scientific data for a few conditions, for example. So yeah. Diabetes is the number one issue in America, I would say, in the entire developed world. So people that they consume low amount of water, and I'm not talking about clinical dehydration, okay?
Right, right.
Regular people, that they think they're perfectly healthy, they just consume low amount of water, those people have significantly higher risk of developing diabetes.
And why is that?
And there's several this is actually, the mechanism is not perfectly clear, but one of the hormones that I mentioned earlier, the antidiuretic hormone, this hormone is activated when you consume low amount of water. That's why you decrease urinary output and your urine gets more concentrated and more yellowish. This hormone, other than the known antidiuretic effect that it has other effects in the liver and the pancreas, and those effects seems to have detrimental effect on your ability to regulate glucose. So they're very nicely control studies in experimental animals where they show if you inject that hormone in animals for 4 weeks, they develop fatty liver disease and they develop diabetes. If you treat those animals with a drug that blocks that hormone, then the condition is reversed. If you take obese diabetic rats and you treat them with high water intake for 4 weeks, you improve their glycemic ability and you decrease the fat content in the liver, what we call fatty liver disease.
Right.
So there are a lot of stuff, and my lab here in Arizona State is studying specifically trying to discover the mechanism, what exactly happened, and how this hormone influenced glucose regulation and diabetes. So I think we're barely scratching the surface in this topic, and there are a lot of things to be learned in the near future.
So wow, Stavros. So what you just described is really probably the most underappreciated nutraceutical or nutritional support that exists, and it's a simple solution that everybody should become more aware of and actually integrate into their daily lives.
Absolutely. And let me give you one more example.
I don't know if I can handle another one. I'm scared already. I got to go find a glass of water right now.
let me give you one more example. Urinary tract infection, which is an issue that is more common in females than in males. So if you talk to any medical doctor, one of the approaches that they recommend for UTI is drink more water. There is not a single clinical trial, randomized controlled trial, that has shown that drinking more water has an effect of urinary tract infection. And actually, to be perfectly correct, there was not up to like about a month ago or so. So the first one was published just, I think it was middle to the end of December in JAMA, which is the Journal of the American Medical Association, one of the most prestigious medical journal in biomedical literature. And they showed if you take women that they have recurrent UTI infections, you can decrease the rate of reappearance but for more than 50%. Within 6 months and more than 70% after a year. So just drinking more water, you can decrease a condition which is costly and painful and recurrent UTIs can create issues for and induce chronic kidney disease and other kidney problems in the future. And outside of those heavy medical conditions that, you know, diabetes and chronic kidney disease and things like that, we know now that low drinking or not consuming enough water throughout the day has a negative impact in things that we never thought of, like cognition. There are studies that they improve water intake in children in school, and kids perform better in math and memory tasks, etc. There are data on mood, especially in females. For some reason, it seems that females are more sensitive as a response to low water intake, at least as far as mood goes. And believe it or not, there are a lot of studies that they were published during the last few years on low water consumers and social behavior. People that they drink small amount of water are not willing to take risks. So they're doing some social experiments on risk taking, and they have found that low drinkers are not willing to take risks.
Wow, that's amazing. So what you're describing, I would interpret as really there are essential basic building blocks to maintaining health at any age. And step one is actually not about macro or micronutrients, but more possibly the concept of hydration with a good quality, clean water source, probably even bottled water in many cases or many regions. And then you can add on the issue of what is the quality of your macronutrients, what's the quality of your micronutrients, and so on. I mean, is that a fair building block assessment?
That's perfectly right. I think this is a very nice way to introduce it. And we do have, with hydration, we do have easy biomarkers that we can pay attention to it. And I'm not referring to anything that you have to run to a laboratory to get it analyzed.
Right.
You can check every day how hydrated you are based on your urine color. This is a very quick and easy and very practical way to figure out whether you need to drink more water. A great advice is having water with you. I mean, this is the first thing I do when I get in my office. I always put water in my glass. I have a glass on my desk. I put water. If I don't have the water next to me, I will not turn around and search, you know, get out of my desk trying to find water to drink.
Right.
And the day will go by, and then during lunch, I will realize I haven't been to the bathroom
right.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from 8 a.m. to noon,
right.
I haven't drank any water because I was busy working and everything. So having access to water, and access, I'm not talking somewhere in the building, in the house,
yeah.
in front of you, and also paying attention of how often you go to the bathroom and how concentrated is your urine, that gives you a very good, information to keep up with water drinking and stay hydrated.
So that's really a simple concept, is just get an easy, convenient way to have water next to you and with you all the time. So that's the power of bottled water as an example. And especially for kids, it sounds like. So, we tend to overcomplicate our approach and concern in trying to manage the health, particularly of our kids. Like, somebody may have some kind of attention deficit disorder or some kind of cognitive impairment. The first thing we want to do is go test their microbiome. Maybe the first thing should be is ask a simple question. Are you drinking enough water? And do you have bottled water with you and available for you every day?
That's absolutely right. I mean, I could not agree more with you. I think the culture is changing, but it's going to take some time. I don't know how many of you remember, 10, 15 years ago, you would go to a restaurant, they will never bring you water.
Right.
They will ask you to bring a soda. Now you go to a restaurant, they bring you water, and then they ask you, would you like to drink anything else?
Right.
I think we're moving there. We're moving the needle. It's just we're not moving fast enough.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm trying to make the paradigm of smoking.
That's powerful.
I don't know if you remember. Yeah, like back in the 50s,
right.
for example, medical doctors will say that smoking is not bad for you. And the cigarette companies were advertising, for example, that you can smoke during pregnancy.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah. I remember hearing a story about that.
I say that to my students, and they're laughing, like, smoking during pregnancy. I'm like, yes, and there is a beneficial effect, according to the tobacco industry. When you smoke during pregnancy, the fetus doesn't grow as much, so
right.
you give birth to a smaller baby.
Oh, so low birth
so the
weight.
The way that the tobacco, it's a win-win situation. You have easy delivery and a great flavor. That was the advertisement.
So low birth weight made delivering babies easier for the mother, right? How outlandish, right? Wow.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, now in 2019, we're talking about it, and we think it's funny or scary, depends how you want to view it.
Right.
But on the other side, I think this is where we are, or maybe a little bit, I hope a little bit after that, when we're saying that, you know, drink whenever you want, just drink whenever you're thirsty. And unfortunately, thirst doesn't kick in to let us know that we need water.
Right.
Fast enough to remain optimally hydrated.
Right.
What thirst is very effective in doing, in letting us know to get super thirsty when we're really losing a lot of water and probably when we are already dehydrated. And I think this is a more what I call a survival instinct versus a fine homeostatic mechanism for fluid balance. And it has a purpose. It has a purpose. I mean, 200 and 400 years ago and maybe 1,000 years ago, when people did not have free access to water all day long, they would not be able to operate if they will get thirsty constantly and they did not have access to water. When thirst gets activated, you know, you shift focus and then your survival kicks in. And then you stop doing whatever you're doing, whether you're hunting to feed your family or whether you're cultivating the earth, and you start looking around for water. And when you don't have access to water, then life can get very complicated, so you can compete for survival overall.
Right.
But looking back in time, what was the life expectancy of people, you know, 50 years, 100 years ago or 200 years ago?
Yeah, like 45,
people
would
live 50 years.
Right.
Yeah, 45, 50,
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now, who would be happy to say, you know, you live 45 great years, and that's it?
Yeah, yeah, not anymore, right?
People want to live 90 and run marathons and break records after, you know, as octogenarians and on.
Right. Well, this has really been fascinating. You're giving us some very practical and simple information that'll make a big difference in health. So I got to ask you a question. Flat or sparkling?
I think this is a personal preference. Sorry. I don't think there is anything wrong by drinking sparkling water.
Right.
The only thing I can think of is if you drink sparkling water because it gives you stomach fullness, you might end up drinking probably less water versus if you were drinking flat.
Yeah.
But sparkling per se, I don't think will be an issue. Water has a lot of implications. I mean, we can spend hours or probably days talking about it. I'll give you a very quick fact. In New York City, they went to all the public schools in New York City, and they changed the water faucets and put those newer water fountains that you can go and fill up your water bottle.
Right.
And by doing that, within a short period of time, they were able to decrease the percentage of obesity in children. So if you drink more water, you can shift from consuming soft drinks to water. But tell me an easier intervention. You know, how many millions and millions of dollars and health campaigns we develop and trying to execute to address childhood obesity.
Right.
And something as simple as creating free access to water where kids can have, you know, true access to water, have a lot of fountains, so during the lunch break they can all go and grab and drink water, etc., could make a dent in the biggest health problem of the century, which is obesity and its implications.
Yeah.
Drinking water before the meal. There are multiple studies that they have shown if you drink water before the meal, it facilitates weight loss due to stomach fullness, probably.
Yeah. Stavros, is there any concern on overconsumption or superhydration? You know, in the last probably 3 or 4 years, frequently we'll hear in the news that people, you know, died of water poisoning. I mean, what's that all about, and is that a real legitimate concern?
It is not a concern. And the Institute of Medicine, when they published their reference values for water intake for Americans, they specifically said that they will not give a UL or an upper limit, that you do not supposed to consume more than this amount. And the purpose they did that, because developing water intoxication, it's extremely rare. It can happen actually more often during ultra-endurance exercise for people that they run marathons and actually ultra-marathons. But even in those cases, I'll give you an example to get an idea. In those cases of marathons, the biggest study that we know was the study from Harvard University that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, where they studied Boston Marathon runners. And they found the ones that they were in risk of developing what is called, the scientific term is hyponatremia or dilutional hyponatremia, were the ones that they will gain as a response to over-drinking during the race, 7 to 12 pounds during the race. So think of this. You're running a marathon, and you gain more than 10 pounds.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
I call it a drinking race.
Yeah, right.
Not a running race.
Yeah. Amazing.
So you have to really drink beyond and above on what your body needs to develop this kind of condition. Okay. And so a very easy way, again, to address this, if you're drinking to the extent that you're going to the bathroom every 15 minutes, then you know you're overdoing it.
Yeah.
So you don't, it's not a race, it's not a competition, drinking like an extremely high amount of water. It's not going to be better than drinking the appropriate amount of water.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Stavros Kavaras, thanks very much for your time. You've given us some really great insights, some compelling advice, and at the same time, convenient and simple that everybody should be more sensitive to and can easily adapt in their lifestyle, daily management. So, Stavros, thanks very much for your time. It's always great talking to you. Look forward to your participation in some of our educational programs. Well, there'll be a lot more time to talk about the deeper science and the impact that hydration can have in maintaining health and supporting a healthy lifestyle. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, John.
Great.
Bye-bye.
This podcast features the song New Day by Lee Rosevier, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you liked this podcast, please share with your friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you next time on Holistic Matters, where we are talking about how to be the you nature intended.